Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Crazy Old Man in the Attic, episode 43. Wilbon, let us start today with the NBA. The NBA has pushed back the date when people can get into their facilities if their facilities are open till May 8th. There are a lot of states in the country. About a third of the NBA teams are in states in the country that have either relaxed the regulations or are intending to do so. Leaving aside the safety issue, just from a fairness and competitive issue, do you think this is fair that some people can use their practice facilities and some people can't?
Probably not. By definition, it's not equal. And so I guess you could say it's not fair. And part of me says, Tone, you know, that's what we got right now. Everything's not going to be equal. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be spread out in the same way equitably. And you may say it's not fair. And yet I would say, okay, the people who have this at their fingertips can use it. And those who can't, God bless. And we don't know when you'll be able to do it. And we'll welcome you when we can. Because, Tony, if you're going to say, okay, everybody has to start at the same place, then I think you're automatically sort of saying, well, we're thinking we're not going to have a season here. I mean, you look at, I just said to you before we went on the air, it's like you and I live in two different worlds right now, being me in Arizona and you in the Northeast. And you're not even in the worst part of the Northeast in terms of the part hardest hit. So I don't know what you do. What do you do about Brooklyn, which is in New York City, which has been the hardest hit place in America, as far as my reading tells me? What do you do? Do you give up on the season? Do you say, okay, until Brooklyn can participate, nobody else can? How would you handle that?
Okay, so just to clarify, although I live in the Northeast, I'm actually in Washington, D.C., and it's okay to say so. I'm happy to be here, although it seems more fun in Arizona at the moment. Look, you and I have a sincere disagreement on this. I don't care when they start, and I'm going to take some time now. I don't care when they start, and I don't care if they start. But I don't believe that some people should be allowed to practice and others are not allowed to practice. I think the NBA has to come up with a fairness policy. For example, states like Texas, states like Georgia, states like Minnesota, they have relaxed regulations, whereas New York, Massachusetts, they do not. I don't think it's fair that Luka Doncic can go into a gym and shoot and Kemba Walker cannot. Right. And, I mean, I understand that the NBA prides itself on being kinder and smarter and more global and more caring. But this, to me, this is a strict fairness issue. You either go with the science or you don't. You either let some people in or you let, to me, you let all people in or you don't let any people in. I guess the disagreement, Mike, is that I'm not certain that if you hold everybody out for the same amount of time, that means no playoffs. Put together something where everybody gets a shot at the gym, and I'm good with that.
Remember, I'm saying to you, it ain't fair. Okay? Everything ain't fair in life.
Right.
It isn't.
Right.
I agree. So we don't have any disagreement on whether this is equitable. We don't. But I don't know what you do about that. Right. Are you also going to say that, okay, so there is quite a few states still with shelter in place. Are you going to say that the people, the players who live in states that don't have shelter in place can't work out individually? They can't do things that their states allow them to do, which would give them an advantage if the season's reopened. Tone, I don't know that you can do that.
Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the NBA, like all sports, has 20 plans in place because it's irresponsible not to. Because when you're ready to go, you got to be ready to go. And I'm saying one of those plans should be to move the players so that they can also work out. I just think competitively you have to do that, but that is our disagreement. Yes.
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be complex and layered and I hope not contentious. We don't need that now. Tony, let's move to Cam Newton, a name we haven't mentioned in maybe a week or so. The New England Patriots are now betting favorites. You can bet on anything in Vegas to sign Cam Newton. However, the Patriots have reportedly shown zero interest in signing Cam Newton. Do you think they should?
First of all, I love the fact, as you suggest, that you can get odds on where Cam Newton is going. Who makes the odds on this stuff? That, I'd like to meet that particular person. Cam Newton, I really like Cam Newton. He's an accomplished, strong, wonderful athlete. But I think you have to, at some point, ask yourself, is it possible that the New England Patriots like Jared Stidham? You know, Devin McCourty the other day said, we play against him in practice all the time. He's really good. We really like him. The New England Patriots did not draft a quarterback. Neither Belichick nor his dog drafted a quarterback, which leads me to conclude, Mike, that they actually like this guy,
yeah,
and they like him more than Cam Newton. I can't get angry at that. Can you?
No, and we don't even know if Cam Newton's healthy enough to play. Let's start there. I mean, you talk about Tua, and what we know about Tua. And we don't know about Cam Newton. He had two different injuries. We don't know about either of them, the shoulder or the foot. We have no idea. But, Tony, even if we had an idea, even if we thought Cam Newton was going to walk out and the next time on the field be 85, 90% of Cam Newton, these are the New England Patriots we're talking about. I know you and I and many like us of our ilk, people of our ilk, we like to go on TV and radio and in the newspaper and tell teams what they should do. There's one team that I'm not even going to try to tell what to do. And it's the New England Patriots.
Right.
What are we
talking about? That's right.
Should they be interested? Because the odds in Vegas say they should. Whatever Bill Belichick and his crew, his posse, think they should do, that's fine with me until we are proven otherwise.
I'll give you one team because I thought about this a little bit. And it depends on Cam Newton and his ego and what he's willing to do. And if he's willing to sit for a year. I would love to see him in Pittsburgh, backing up Ben Roethlisberger, who is coming back from injury. They're both massive guys. They play in the same way. I think Tomlin and Cam Newton could be a year of rehabilitation in some ways, and it could be very good. I just think that would be fun to see him there. But I don't know what the odds are. I'm not putting any money down, but I'm moving on to the next story. Here we go. This is your boy, Isaiah Thomas. This story makes me smile from ear to ear.
I know
Isaiah Thomas, who will talk to anybody about Michael Jordan, is now talking to CBS Sports, and he said two things. He said, first of all, the Bulls were great in the 90s, but Jordan's team didn't beat the great teams of the 80s, Magic's Lakers, Bird Celtics, and Isaiah Thomas's Pistons. And then he was asked to rank top five players he's seen and played against. And he went this way. He went Kareem 1, Bird 2, Magic 3, then MJ. Fair or foul?
Well, Tony, you certainly rank one of those people ahead of Michael if you were going to start a team, Magic Johnson. And you've never heard me even disagree with you on that, even though I would say Magic. Who's going to, like, we're not going to go crazy over those guys, are we? I mean, let me just say, I talked to Isaiah Thomas last night, and I'm not going to talk on the air about most of what we talked about because, well, yes, we are right now because I'm going to divulge a little bit. I said to him, don't tell me that these new athletes who are supposed to be new and improved could dominate the 80s and the 90s because they couldn't. So we're going to fight about that. And this was a good-natured conversation for a while, Tony, because they wouldn't. Because I don't care if they're better athletes, and I'm not sure they are. And I told Isaiah, none of those guys are better athletes than he was 30 years ago. They're not. Okay, and they wouldn't beat the Pistons, and they wouldn't beat the Celtics or the Bulls in the 90s either. So I don't want to hear that. We got into that. But, Tony, the guys he mentioned, Kareem, Bird, and Magic, well, you and I, we're going to fight with Isaiah on that? No, we're not. And Michael Jordan, Michael, who has always said to me in an interview, he said, I'm not going to say I'm better than Russell. I'm not going to say I'm better than Kareem. I'm not going to say I'm better than Larry and Magic. That, there's no even real huge disagreement there, even though I would not rank Michael fourth and neither would you.
I love the phrase to throw shade, which is what Isaiah Thomas is doing every single day that he can now. Isaiah Thomas, who has been irrelevant for about 6 to 10 years, has risen from the crypt to take slice upon slice out of Michael Jordan. I might rate Magic number one.
Right.
But Magic and Bird
rate Jordan
number one.
Yeah.
They have both said that Michael Jordan is the best. This is about the dream team. This is about Isaiah being angry about not being on the dream team, which, as you know, he should have been. He was no worse than the fourth or fifth best player who would have been on that dream team. That was bad. His coach, Chuck Daly, didn't fight hard enough. His best friend, Magic Johnson, didn't fight hard enough. And he's going to blame Michael Jordan. And that may be very fair. Michael Jordan, for all I know, kept him off, and Michael Jordan won.
No,
but I will say this.
He didn't keep him off.
Since Russell, you tell me who's 6-0 in playoff championships. Michael Jordan is.
So, just one.
He's it.
Yeah,
he's it.
No, he's it. Tony, look, we could do this every day. You know what? We could talk about it. We can go back and revisit
it. I hope so.
I can tell. I mean, because you were actually going to games and staying awake back then, weren't you? You were watching some of that stuff in person. How about that? What a trip back in the time machine.
Well,
that
I love this. I love this, Mike, because it's Chicago on Chicago crime. It can't be any better for me. I love this.
You know, I'm not really conflicted about saying Jordan is the greatest because you know I feel that way. Some of it's conflicting. I mean, I've known Isaiah Thomas since he was 13, and he was scoring 45 on my brother, St. Joe's against St. Ignatius. When I talked to him yesterday, he just goes, Michael Wilbon, St. Ignatius College Prep. We started laughing. And in that moment, I'm not going to hate anybody. But Tony, this conversation, the one was better yesterday about whether or not those guys, including LeBron and Kevin Durant, would dominate the 80s and 90s. And that's where I take exception with Isaiah. I disagree with him wholeheartedly. They're not dominating anything. Not dominating, they might win something.
No.
I guess we have to move on, even though we don't want to. Longtime PGA Pro Tour Pro Pat Perez, who's here in Arizona, Tony, told ESPN's Bob Herrick that he hopes they do the equivalent of a last dance with Tiger Woods. Tony, how would you compare and contrast Michael and Eldrick?
First of all, I would like to say that Pat Perez's hair is fantastic. I wish I had Pat Perez's hair. Look, I would love to see a documentary about Tiger Woods. How would I compare and contrast them? They both are killers out there for whom winning matters more than anything else by a landslide margin. And the tip-off in Tiger was this. A long time ago, Tiger started talking about winning majors because he knew he wasn't chasing Sam Snead. He was chasing Jack Nicklaus because Jack Nicklaus is the best golfer that ever lived, and Tiger wanted a piece of that. I don't think Tiger was as confrontational specifically to opponents as Michael Jordan has been, but I believe he was every bit as intimidating as Michael Jordan was. And you know, I'd love to see it. There's one big difference, though, Mike. I mean, Tiger, if you do a documentary, Tiger has the public shaming that Michael Jordan never had. He has the scandal. He has the divorce. He has the appearance of dependency and then the great rise and the comeback. But it would be of a different quality, don't you think?
Yeah, Tony, I think it would. Let me go back to Pat Perez for a second, who is here in Arizona. I don't know if he lives here full time. I see him around. I see him at actually the golf course, Scottsdale National. And I've listened to Pat. It's great. A year ago, before the Masters, they're practicing to go to Augusta. And Pat says, this would be incredible if Tiger could do this. And he could do it. He said, I've competed against him since I was 12 years old. That's how far he goes back with Tiger. So, Tony, he has more history. And I remember one of the specific things he said, all these young guys, they say they want a piece of Tiger on Sunday. They don't want a piece of Tiger on Sunday. And Pat, who's still a competitive, I mean, he's a tough guy. He said that in a way that he knew what he was talking about with Tiger and all the richness there, the material that would be there to look at Tiger. You mentioned some drawbacks and some reason that Tiger would probably never cooperate. And I can understand that. But the competitive part of it, Tony, would be fascinating if we could just even hone in on that.
Oh,
the golf in 1996 to 2008, it's phenomenal to see that with behind-the-scenes footage and interviews and those same kinds of elements.
They've got all that. All the footage is there from everything Tiger has done at a younger age than Michael Jordan, probably. That's all there. But Tiger's still in the middle of his career. You got to want to look back. He's still looking at it and looking forward a little bit.
Yeah.
So I doubt he's ready to do this in the way that Jordan was.
Yeah. So we'll have like 20 years or so to wait for the Tiger documentary, 10 parts. You and I'll be around for that.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Glasses on, scripts ready. Happy 28th birthday, Blake Bortles. Bortles was the first quarterback taken in the 2014 draft at number 3 out of the University of Central Florida by Jacksonville. Bortles started right away and the numbers aren't good. His record as a starter was 24-49, and between 2014 and 2018, Bortles threw the most interceptions in the NFL, 75. While his tenure in Jacksonville was obviously disappointing, Bortles did lead the Jaguars to the 2017 AFC Championship game in Foxborough, where Bortles was actually leading 20-10 in the fourth quarter. How different might Bortles' career have been had Jacksonville won that game instead of losing 24-20? By 2019, he was out of a job in Jacksonville after the Jags signed Nick Foles as a free agent. Bortles spent last season backing up Jared Goff for the Los Angeles Rams, and as an unsigned free agent, Bortles says he is, quote, weighing several options, unquote, one of which might be changing occupations.
Wait a minute. Suppose Bill Belichick wants to coach him. Suppose he wanted to bring him in and shorten his elongated throwing motion and coach him up. Would you bet against Bill Belichick and his staff and their ability to get Bortles back on the field and to a form that's better than he ever had in Jacksonville? Would you?
Don't bet against Belichick. Don't bet against the dog. Never going to happen. No. Happy anniversary, Rasheed Wallace. On this day, 17 years ago, after a playoff win against Dallas that kept Portland from being swept, Sheed informed us all that, quote, both teams played hard, my man. Both teams played hard, unquote. That was basically it. Wallace was fined $30,000 by the NBA for endlessly repeating this drivel.
Damn.
A particularly savvy member of the NBA's public relations staff had some T-shirts printed up that said, both teams played hard, my man, and it's possible that I was in receipt of one of them. Rasheed Wallace played 16 seasons in the NBA for 6 different teams, made 4 All-Star teams, and won a championship with the Detroit Pistons under Larry Brown. He was the number 4 overall pick in the 1995 draft out of North Carolina, one pick behind his college teammate Jerry Stackhouse, and one ahead of a high school kid, Kevin Garnett.
Wow. Tony, the sad part about that whole both teams play hard is that he was then put into a role that he just stayed there. I don't think Rasheed particularly liked it, because if you walked in the shoot around or someplace where there was no crowd and you talked to Rasheed, he was completely engaging and fine to talk to, and that episode colored everything most people see. And we're not going to have a 10-part documentary on Sheed to know what he was really like, but I like talking to him, just saying.
I had the T-shirt. I no longer have the T-shirt. Happy trails, Dustin Colquitt. In what is widely being interpreted as a cap casualty, the Kansas City Chiefs released their punter of the last 15 seasons with 1 year to go on his contract. Colquitt, whose last game as a Chief was February's Super Bowl victory, posted this on Instagram. Quote, holding this post for 15 years has been an honor that I never took for granted, unquote. As the Mannings are the NFL's first family of quarterbacks, the Colquitts are the first family of punters. Besides Dustin, there is younger brother Britton, who won a Super Bowl with Denver. Cousin Jimmy punted for the Seattle Seahawks, and Dad Craig punted for the Pittsburgh Steelers and won 2 Super Bowls. All the Colquitts played for the University of Tennessee. On a personal note, Dustin and Britton's uncle, my friend Tim Davis, was a tight end at Auburn and once got an albatross on number 12 at Columbia Country Club. Not that you needed to know that.
Tony, suppose a young Colquitt was particularly adept at throwing the football. Do you think an elder would see this and say, hey, put it on your foot, son. We don't throw the football in this family. I mean, I just wondered if he would be prevented from just sort of pursuing another line of football. I wonder how that would work.
He'd be banned from the family.